Okay, today I'm in Midland with trainer Mickey Hammond. Thanks very much for agreeing to talk to us today, Mickey. We'll go straight into something I've been told about you. You're known to have a good eye for a horse. Is that something that you've had to train yourself to do, or is it something that's been naturally sort of you found you've got a talent for?
Probably a bit of both, really, and also a fair slice of luck. But certain horses, either in the parade ring or in the sales ring, would be walking around and something catches your eye. But I like a fairly loose moving horse that walks loosely and also carries itself well and has a kind eye.
Okay, now would you generally go for horses in training sale, or would you take a gamble on something unraced, or does it depend on the price?
Both, really. We've been lucky with both types of horses, as most people have, to be honest with you. Horses in training sale, you have a bit of an idea what you're getting, but you're also looking for a reason why you might improve that horse. It could be a different training regime, it could be stepping up in distance or actually coming back in distance, or you could feel that the horse has been running too often on the wrong surface, or different riding tactics. So there's lots of different ways to look at proven horses of horses in training. As for horses that are untried, you'd like to go for certainly a horse that has a pedigree and also moves nicely on and off the lunge.
Okay, would where the horse has come from be a big bearing on what you would buy?
I'm a great believer in going back to places where you've been lucky before. And I certainly wouldn't go back to somewhere where I've been unlucky the previous time.
I mean, the origin of the horse, if it's come from a certain source, would that be a bearing to you, from a certain trainer or from a certain breeder?
Yeah, we have been lucky from certain sources, and we like to keep going back because they actually know what we're looking for and what we want as well, which also helps the job. And then for them, the consignor, they want us to keep coming back, so they're looking to put the right individual in our direction.
Right, so would you have scoured the catalogue and looked through and thought, well, this, or would you do it the other way around and wait for something to catch your eye and then consult the catalogue, which would be your...
I generally have a look at the catalogue the night before or the day before and thumb right the way through it and mark off quite a number of horses. And then I go back through it again the morning of the sale and reduce the horses that I'd marked for various reasons. And then I would look at the individual, which again, I would reduce the number of horses that we or might be interested in.
And do you have a maximum that you set yourself that you would pay, or does that depend on who you're getting it for?
Generally depending on who we're getting the horse for. But when you're buying on spec, you need to be buying something that you would feel is value for money, hopefully is by a commercial stallion that has some sort of a selling point, such as like on the flat, if you've got a, shall we say, a yearling by or a two-year-old by Sir Percy, for example. He was second in the Guineas and he won the Derby. So that's a real good, strong selling point from a horse that we've actually been lucky with, Sir Percy's, and he's a good commercial stallion with horses that fetch sensible prices.
Okay, and being an ex-successful jockey, do you think that gives you a better understanding of what you're looking for when you're buying horses?
I think it can help, but whether it would give me an advantage over other people, I wouldn't necessarily say so.
And talking about your jockey past, did you enjoy that career?
Yeah, great. I enjoyed it whilst I did it. I've had my thrills and spills from being a national hunt jockey. It's something that I don't look back thinking, gosh, I wish I was still going. But sometimes when you watch the races live or on the TV and you see one of the lads have a crunching fall, you think, thank God that wasn't me. And I've been there before. I know what that feels like. But it was great. It's very much a young man's game, in as much you have a certain amount of mileage in you before it gets to a certain point where you've possibly had enough. But although saying it's a young man's game, you can't beat, once you've gone through the mill as a young man, you can't beat that bit of experience that you gain as a young man in the sport, really.
Yeah. Well, so moving to now, a successful trainer. Looking around Midland this morning, you've got a couple of is it 2 yards in the village?
Yes. We've Oakwood and Sharp Hill.
Okay. So how many horses do you have in your care at the moment?
70.
And is that a target?
That's a nice number. We can take 45 at Oakwood and 25 at Sharp Hill. It's a number that works real well for us. We're always trying to improve the quality, but you can only work with the stock that you've got, and we like to try and get the very best out of every individual that we've got.
And do you set yourself mentally or, you know, publicly a target for winners for each season before it starts?
Interesting. The numbers of horses that we've got now, I think that on the flat we like to hit double figures. We've only a small flat team of around 15, 16 horses, generally cheaply bought purchases, and with a view to most of them in time making jumpers, whether they're at 3, 4, 5 years of age. On the jumping front, we like to hit 40 plus. And it's a good workable number and an achievable number. It's no good setting targets too high that are impossible to reach, but also you don't want to be kidding yourself and setting a target of 20 winners for the whole season, because we have a team of summer jumpers as well as a larger team of winter jumpers that some horses, because we find out during the middle of the winter, are suited to better ground, end up going summer jumping. But also in the winter team, that is generally all the young horses that are coming through that may not even run in their first season in training.
You talked about summer jumping there. Are you a fan of it?
It's served us well over the last few years. I would be more of a traditionalist. I enjoyed it when I was a jockey, when we had the 9 weeks off. I thought that worked particularly well. Everybody could then concentrate on just solely flat racing. It gave the jump trainers and staff and jockeys a break. But now I think it's impossible to go back to something like that, because some of the race courses especially have geared themselves to summer jumping that works particularly well for them. But I do feel that it would be great if the jumping could have a 3 week break in the middle of the summer. And when I say the middle of the summer, it probably would have to incorporate some part of August or late July for the lads and lasses that have school kids on holiday.
Okay, yeah, and of course it gives the punters something to look forward to as well. Geez, everybody up for the
very much so, season. Very much so. Now I think during the summer everybody's looking at Royal Ascot and July meeting at Newmarket and Glorious Goodwood.
Yeah. So what would be the biggest challenge a trainer faces? And that's quite
I think really is keeping afloat, really, in the economic climate, in as much that wages are a lot higher than what they used to be, and I think that the racing staff who work really hard are far better rewarded now than back in my day, and things such as your feed and bedding, they're always creeping up. Prize money levels seem to be, if anything, just slipping down rather than holding their own. So it's, yeah, trying to run a successful yard where you're regularly getting winners. You don't want a situation where, let's say, you have your 40 jumping winners, but you have 3 months where you have all your winners and then 9 months where you don't have any winners at all. So just nicely spread out works really well. But yeah, a successful yard with winners and keeping the owners and staff happy.
Okay, now being a dual purpose yard, is that, you'd have thought that would benefit you, so you can tick over all year or be operating all year round, or does it have its own particular difficulties?
Well, obviously it makes the 24/7 job 365 days of the year, but I do like my flat racing. And although I'm not a fan of summer jumping, as I've said, we are successful at it, and it gets us a good start going into the winter. With we usually have 10, 12 winners on the board come the end of September.
So just hypothetically, if you had to choose, what code would you concentrate on? And did you ever think you might concentrate on one or the other eventually?
I've always been typecast really as a jump trainer. To be truthful, I'm probably better training jumpers, although we have had our successes, as you well know, on the flat. The flat racing, you have to be lucky to buy a cheap horse to get the horse in the winner's enclosure. I think a lot of people will tell you this, and as we know, money doesn't necessarily buy success either. But to buy a nice individual, a nice yearling that moves well, has a pedigree, and has a kind eye, you usually have to pay decent bucks for.
We were chasing around on the gallops earlier in one of the vehicles, and I was told to mention that you have unofficially been declared the best dressed trainer. Now, can you tell me the origins of this? And is that the case?
It's news to me, but there was a guy on the television just the other day, and one of the fellas in the studio said that I think Mickey Hammond's down at the starting stalls there with a horse of his that is reluctant to go in, and this well-known pundit said, well, if he's wearing a pair of shorts and a waistcoat, it's definitely Mickey Hammond. Everybody knows that I wore shorts for a period of time, going back a few years ago now, for 5 charities, but I think we're going back at least 7 or 8 years ago now. But yeah, I like to wear a nice suit or a smart pair of trousers, but I nearly always at work on a morning, and quite often at the races in an afternoon, wear a waistcoat.
Okay, so get a little bit more serious. It's been done to death, I know everybody's been talking about it. 2 hot topics at the time of the interview. One of them is the old whip debate. What would your opinions be on where we are with, you know, the air cushioned padded whip?
I think that we've got it somewhere near right. That's my own personal view. I used to, as you well know, ride on the track, and different style of whip those days, different whip rules. But I think a lot of time and effort and work has gone into this, and I think the 7 strokes or 7 smacks with the whip is about right. You do find that if they don't go for 2 or 3 encouraging smacks with the whip, another 22 or 23 is not going to make a great deal of difference. We feel also in our yard that if, say, running to the 2 furlong marker or jumping the second last obstacle, and our horse is in contention, but our jockey's the first to go for his whip, it invariably means we're beat.
In your career as a jockey, do you ever remember thinking that one more cracker would have won it, that sort of thing, or is it not?
Just occasionally, I cannot remember the horse now. It was at, I think I might have been on something like Ballydarrow at Newcastle in the Ekbalco hurdle or something, and I came away that particular day thinking, well, if I'd have just given him one more backhander instead of getting beat a short head, we might have won a short head. But I used the whip fairly sparingly as a jockey, because I felt that in lots of cases horses were giving their best in any case. Some horses certainly did curl up under the whip, under pressure, and I would rather sort of squeeze, coax, even sort of growl or hiss in their ears just to encourage them to go forward, rather than flopping around on the back of them and getting them unbalanced, waving a whip.
Okay, and you've got a lot of ladies in the yard, you know, some of the, one of them, at least we've interviewed earlier, a good rider. What would your... the race rider we're talking, what would your opinion on somebody's muted that female jockeys should be given an allowance? What would your opinion on that be? A weight allowance?
Well, they all start off the same as the lads claiming seven, and in lots of cases the girls in years gone by haven't lost their seven or their five or three as quickly as the lads have. But in recent times that is changing. I would feel that treat them the same as the lads. They ride really well. Some horses certainly do run better for the more sympathetic handling, but also there's plenty of good girls that know how to use the whip in the right way and get the best out of their horses. So I'm one for a level playing field for the lads and the girls.
Okay, now is there anything else in that's a bugbear for you in racing that you think could be improved that hasn't been or not been addressed as of yet?
Well, we've got the usual chestnut of the at the lower end where prize money levels definitely need to be better. I think there is probably too much racing at the lower end, but we're not running around for any more prize money now, 30 years after me packing up as a jockey. Well, that's surely got to be wrong, because 30 years ago the prize money levels were probably just only okay. So things have moved on a lot since then. But to actually reduce racing, people feel that this will actually bring a little bit more money into the lower end of the racing scale, but it doesn't quite work like that, as we well know. I also feel that racing staff, who are looked after far better now than ever before, still at certain race courses can be looked after better. Overnight accommodation especially, they should get free food and drink at all the race courses, in my opinion, when they're there working in a certain time. And also I do feel that the owners should get a far better deal. It's their horses that are the entertainment for the afternoon, and in certain cases some of the race courses are still back in the 1970s.
Okay, now I've come down with Andy Gibson today, who's a well-known sort of punter, and he tells me that he's never known a happier yard. Now, is that something that you'd agree with for starters, and is it something you've had to work on, or you're just naturally blessed that you've got people that have come in and really get on together, and is it important?
Very important. It's more by design than luck, but you do need your luck to have the right staff that are either being sent to you or want to join the team. And then we try and have sort of team bonding sessions where they've been paintballing, they've been bowling, we've been to Lightwater Valley on numerous occasions, we've been to the Forbidden Corner. We'll have a night out.
The Forbidden Corner?
Yeah. I'll let your imagination run away while you're there with a team of racing staff. We've been to the Greyhounds. So we do try and encourage that side of it, so as we've got a almost like a family team working together. But it's not that easy to do when you've maybe sort of 20 members of staff and 70 horses, and if it got bigger than that, I'd find it quite difficult to try and do and try and achieve. But generally we want people to come to Mickey Hammond Racing, work hard, do well, and when they move on from Mickey Hammond Racing, we like them to do even better.
Okay, now in Midland where we are, there's a lot of yards. What's the camaraderie like in the wider scheme of things with other yards? A friendly rivalry, or is there a rivalry?
I would say very good, to be honest about it. The yards, they mix well. There's the four pubs in Midland itself, good eating places, the same as what there is in Leyburn, which is only 2 miles away, and that Midland and Leyburn are where the majority of the racing staff would either live or rent accommodation. And with the fact that they are better paid now, they are able to get out a lot more socially than what they used to be able to back in my day or before my day. You worked 12 and a half days out of 14 on your weekend off the Saturday afternoon and the Sunday, all day Sunday, that would allow you to go out on the Saturday night and have a a good session or of whatever you wanted, really, and then sleep it off the next day. But this day and age, because they are better looked after, and it's for the good, they're able to go out for a meal in the week and have a drink in the week, where as a few years ago it was unheard of.
Okay, now just a couple of questions. Well, obviously horse racing revolves around gambling. It's financed by gambling. But a lot of people seem to think it's a bit of a dirty word. I mean, in your yard, would the planning of a horse's career involve, right, we'll see if we can land a punt here, you know, is that sort of bearing to what you, how you plan things?
I wouldn't say the horse's career, but Jack Ramsden said to me many, many years ago, I used to ride out there, and he said, if you get a horse well handicapped, the horse is made for life. And I'm a great believer in that, because when a horse has his first mark, he can, either if he's been put in too high or an impossible task or whatever, he can drop down maybe 10 pounds in five runs. You win that race, the handicapper soon puts him back up to that original mark that you had him on.
Okay. So what would, I mean, you've been very successful up here. What would your ultimate ambition as a trainer be? Or have you already, you know, have you got to where you want to be?
Well, I enjoy doing what I'm doing. We like having winners. And just ticking along, really, to be honest with you. I enjoy the camaraderie in the yard. I like working and dealing with the horses and the staff. It's nice on nice mornings like this morning, with owners coming into the yard. We carry on as per normal, and they've just got to tag along with us, really. But nothing changes that way around. Having worked in racing since I left school, which we're going back now 40 years, going up and down that A1 can be a little bit more tedious than what it was 20, 30 years ago. So I tend to spend a little bit more time in the yard than what I do at the races. But the hard work and the preparation of the horses is all done at home. We've got some good staff that are well capable of putting the saddle on the right way round at the races, and good, honest, competent jockeys that work and ride for us.
Okay, lovely. Mickey Hammond, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's not just online betting at Star Sports. You can call us too on 08000 5-1 3-1 and speak directly to one of our friendly and experienced traders. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.